is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
And with that, we bring along from ESPN and the Drop Podcast our good man Greg Wyshynski. Hello, Gregory. How are you?
Better than you, apparently. What was up with you this week? You all right?
I don't know, man. Like, last Friday, I was cool. It was all good. Went to work, no problem. Getting ready to watch hockey the whole night. And then, like, around 7:30, the sweating and the shivering, and here comes the cold medications, and here comes the cough, and now I can't sleep, and where did this headache come from, and why aren't the drugs taking the headache away, and what does this all mean? And there's the not being able to fall asleep, and then there's being awake and watching a Saturday's full of games and not remembering anything from any of them because I was just pumped up on lack of sleep and various drugs, and just kind of went from there, Greg. And I think I'm okay today. I tried to work on Tuesday, and that was a mistake. But I'm back today, sort of. I can see if I can make it through the next 60 minutes. Huh.
This is unusual. You've given us a lot of information about your medical well-being. You do realize you're in Toronto,
yeah,
right?
I know. No, I know. They guard it like secrets here. Just look at Austin Matthews. It's a cold. No, it's a conky. No, it's got to be a broken arm. No, you sure it's not his back? He's just got food poisoning. We've heard it all, Greg. And the answer is nobody knows.
Yeah, but the good news is that for all of the Austin Matthews coverage, you guys already had your Willie Nylander stories. So you just had to do like a find and replace for Austin Matthews' name.
Pretty much.
Medical mystery.
It just warmed everyone up for it.
It is kind of wild that two of these things crop up in the same series with the same team. This sort of like, what's going on with this guy stuff.
Yeah.
But hey, you know, like, I know he's not playing tonight, but maybe we'll get another case of the Ewing theory. The great Bill Simmons theory that when Patrick Ewing didn't play for the Knicks, the Knicks would play better in his absence. Obviously, that was what was going on in Game 5, where everybody put on their big boy pants because they couldn't look over at Matthews to score, you know, another goal and beat the Bruins.
Okay, so let me. All right, okay. You know what? Let's go. Let's take that into last year's playoffs.
Okay.
And I don't think this. Put it this way: what I'm about to mention wasn't lost on some people. Vegas Dallas last year, Jamie Benn got suspended for 2 games for that cross check to Mark Stone. Remember that one down on the ice cross check?
I was there for it. It was a hell of a thing.
What happened in those 2 games?
The Stars rallied, if memory serves, correct?
Yes. That's right. Then what happened when Jamie Benn came back?
The Stars did not rally. The rally ended.
The Stars did not rally.
I mean, there's
all coincidence.
There's a slight difference between Austin Matthews and Jamie Benn in the year of our Lord 2024. Oh. But I will say this, though. Good. You know, listen, this entire series between the Leafs and the Bruins has descended into pop psychology. We are talking more about the Boston Bruins' mindset and their thoughts and their mental fortitude and what Jim Montgomery is or isn't saying than we are about any functional thing happening on the ice. There was more talk about what happened in Game 5 against the Panthers last year than there was a debate on whether or not Linus Ullmark should start in Game 6 this year. In the Leafs' case, though, my point about Matthews is that, I mean, they're already punching from underneath in that Game 5, right? Like the Bruins win the Game 4. They're in the driver's seat for the series. Now you got Matthews out of the lineup. Now it's even bleaker. And now you have even more agency to play with reckless abandon, knowing that the chips are stacked against you and your season's all but over. So in a weird way, if we want to really kind of play out Ewing theory, it's not necessarily that you know, Matthews is out of the lineup. You no longer look for him to save the day. Maybe that's part of it. The bigger impact is probably making an underdog making an underdog have even longer odds in a situation like that, and that obviously, you know, led to victory in some strange way.
It's weird too, because you would think that coming back to Toronto would be a bonus now for the Maple Leafs and put them in some type of driver's seat here, even without Austin Matthews. This is a team that just doesn't perform well at home. This is a team that is, it just seems as if it's walking such a fine line of, you know, their entire nervous system blowing up, that all the pressure that comes along with playing at home seems to work. Like I said from day one, the best thing for the Maple Leafs in this series was that Boston has home ice, so they don't have to open up at home. And they lose the first game, no problem. Then they win game two. It's like that. It was the dream scenario for the Maple Leafs. Then they went and got punted on games three and four, and we thought we were going to see, you know, the game five exit, as Brad Marchand predicted in game four, as he skated down the Maple Leafs bench, which is one of my favorite enduring images from game four, just watching him sort of whistle down the bench saying, yeah, done in five, boys, done in five, done in five. All the guys on the bench are losing their minds at Brad Marchand. Like, I have no clue. Like, none of us really do, but I have no clue what's going to happen tonight. None of us do. Do we see another great game out of Max Domi? I certainly hope so for Max Domi and the Maple Leafs' sake. Do we see a better performance from Mitch Marner like we saw in Game 5? I certainly hope so for the Maple Leafs fans' sake. But this is, again, this is still a mighty, mighty climb for the Maple Leafs. The expectation is still Boston closes this thing out tonight.
I do like your idea that that you've sort of led me to, which is if the Leafs suck at home and the Bruins suck at home, they should have just played this entire series in Kansas City. Give the people of Kansas City a chance to see some Stanley Cup playoff hockey. Both teams get a neutral site.
No, Utah. Utah, what? Let's go.
I don't know if that's a neutral site.
Chum the waters. They're NHL fans now.
They have to have some rooting interest. But it is inexplicable how these two teams play on their respective home ices. And I don't know, like I tend to believe that we're getting a game seven, to be honest with you. Like, just as crazy as that
really?
Sounds. Yeah, I do.
I don't have that feeling at all. I don't.
I think I have the same PTSD that the Bruins have. I covered that series last year against Florida. I saw the cracks in their psyche develop pretty quickly when the Panthers counterpunched. And I think it's real. Listen, we're talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs here, right? We know inherently how hard it is to exorcise the demons of playoff failures past, because they've haunted this franchise since the 60s. Okay.
Yeah.
In the Bruins' case, the wounds are fresh. In the Bruins' case, this is pretty much the same team, minus a few guys that they're no longer there, that went through all that with Florida last year. And quite frankly, you know, it's almost like fitting a template. They lost in overtime in game five to the Panthers. They lose in overtime in game five to the Leafs. They go up to Toronto. It could be just a giant mess of an offensive game, and maybe the Leafs win that. And you go back to Boston, and again, like, it is crazy to me. That this series began with all of us who wanted the Leafs to win, in the sense that we picked them to win, thinking that it had to get done in six, because there was absolutely no way that they could win a game seven in Boston. There is absolutely a way they could win a game seven in Boston if they win game six tonight.
We'll see. Like, I don't know. I've used up so many brain cells and so much oxygen on this one already, when really, like, I have no clue what happens tonight, and I can't even begin to sort of predict or imagine what this is going to look like, because I have no idea what happens if either the Bruins score first or the Maple Leafs score first. Because I honestly can see a scenario here where the Boston Bruins open up this game by scoring two quick goals. The Maple Leafs chase it all game long. They somehow tie it in the third period and then lose it in overtime. It is the leafiest way to lose. Get behind early, fight back, ultimately fall on their face.
I think the whole game comes down to Wall and Swayman. I do. I mean, it's kind of what happened last game in some ways. But, you know, this is the first L that Swayman's taken against the Leafs this season. And his game, it was not his fault, clearly. Not his fault at all in game five. But that invincibility is gone a little bit, you know, that can we beat this guy is gone. And I, you know, there was a thought from some people, do you do Ullmark here, give Swayman a little rest and then bring him back game seven? And honestly, I kind of would have been down with that if I'm the Bruins.
Now you're married to Swayman, even if they lose tonight.
Right.
you got to go back to Sway. He's the guy. For all the talk about, no, it doesn't matter. We're still doing the rotation in the first round. They've settled on Swayman, and Swayman is the guy, period.
I know.
Okay, we'll see what happens tonight. Let me get to a few other spots here with you. I opened up the show today by asking not who is, but rather asking what is Pierre-Luc Dubois. We know who the person is. Part of my frustration, and I think we all share this one, is trying to figure out what this player is. Is he a power forward? Is he a net front guy? Is he a skilled shooter? Is he a 200-foot guy with a great aggressive back check? Like, who is Pierre-Luc Dubois? This is all under the umbrella of we've all watched him in the NHL play with Columbus and fall apart and crumble the relationship with John Tortorella. We all saw him do his Pierre-Luc Dubois thing in Winnipeg. Wasn't exactly the most popular guy on the block with that team, which ushered an exit to Los Angeles. And then in the first year of this mega long deal that pays him $8.5 million on the AAV, wasn't a great regular season. We gave him the benefit of the doubt and said, you rewrite yourself in the postseason. And now here we are, and here I am asking you, Greg Wyshynski, not who, but what is Pierre-Luc Dubois? I can't figure out what this guy does or is supposed to do out there. Can you?
Well, he's rich because someone handed him a contract for being 25 years old, 6'3", and having one great playoff where people thought he was Jonathan Toews. And based on that, he is now quite wealthy. He is the embodiment of potential. And that's why Rob Blake signed him. You know, the idea that you don't often get centers with these specifications and that with the potential to be dominant offensively as a power center, you don't often get the chance to acquire these players. You know, 27 goals and 6-3 points in 73 games last season for Winnipeg is nothing to sneeze at. It just that those numbers were not repeated in any way, shape, or form with Los Angeles Kings. So I'm of two minds on Dubois. The first is that he has compensated and has earned admiration from some people in the NHL, Rob Blake, for a very, very short amount of proof of concept. But my other thought is that when you look at 40 points in 82 games, and when you look at the playoff performance, when you think about two goals, Merrick, and 9 assists in his last 21 games this season, regular season and playoffs, and then you think about how Jim Hiller had the Kings playing, is it all Dubois being garbage? Or is it a bad fit between player and system?
Okay, here's where I'm at on that.
Okay.
That's the excuse we've been using for Pierre-Luc Dubois for a while. Oh, it just wasn't a fit. Wasn't a fit in Columbus. I can tell you, even going back to junior hockey, his last year after he moved from Cape Breton to Blainville-Boisbriand, who would the coach have been there? Hang on. The coach of that team, Blainville, Joel Bouchard.
Oh, okay.
No, it wasn't Gord. That is the Canadian name, though. Joel Bouchard, in that final series against St. John's, was considering scratching him and wanted to scratch him. Like, there has always been this sort of level of frustration that coaches, organizations reach with Pierre-Luc Dubois. Did he put up some points last year for the Winnipeg Jets? Absolutely. But as far as chemistry goes with key players in that room, this was looked at from Winnipeg's point of view and talking to people there, an addition by subtraction trade for that room.
Very much so.
And now here we are at the Los Angeles Kings. Like, I don't disagree with the premise that, like, listen, Hiller had him playing, we're going to win every game 1-0 structure. But at a certain point, I kind of have to stop just saying, yeah, but in this situation, it was this coach. Yeah, but in this situation, it was this system. Yeah, but in this situation, at a certain point, you just have to say, like, at some point, you got to play, you know? And I think to your point about potential, And I always think back to something we would mention on the old MVSW podcast from time to time. It's the old saying about big players and small players. And that is, a small player has to prove that he can play and a big player has to prove that he can't.
Yeah.
And I think that's exactly right.
Yeah.
You look at the size and go, wow. And the skill and go, wow, this guy's going to be, I don't know, Eric Lindros meets Jean Beliveau. Well, no.
No.
No. Not even close.
He's not even Brett Lindros meets Jean Beliveau at this point. So the thing about him, there's two things.
Wow.
First of all, good thing he's not Russian, or else they might be calling him an enigma. The second thing is...
Hang on. I know it's a joke, but I'm glad you mentioned that. Because there is very much a Kovalev thing hanging around here. Because when he wants to play, he's awesome. The problem is, he doesn't want to play very often. And he takes more games off than he takes on.
But the other thing I'll say
about
Kovalev...
You're 100% right about that.
Well, the other thing about Kovalev, though, is that people liked him. I think the thing that you said that I find most fascinating is that there's a certain alienation that's occurred in every stop that he's had. You know, I can't get into the room and say exactly how it was in Columbus, but I know for a fact that he wasn't well-liked in Winnipeg. I don't know what the situation is in Los Angeles, but he was signed to a long-term contract to be the understudy and then eventual replacement for Andre Kopitar. Like, that's why you sign him. You need a number one center at some point, and it's going to be him once Kopitar retires, which is probably going to happen in the next couple seasons, in theory. So, like, if you're betting on this guy long-term, shouldn't you bet on a guy long-term that you think your room might like? Like, you know, I mean, isn't part of Kopitar's appeal the fact that people really like him? They like him. They like his dog. Yeah. They genuinely enjoy playing with him. Like, if part of the Dubois, you know, makeup, and it clearly is from what you and I both know, is that he's not exactly the most well-liked guy in the room. It's kind of crazy to sort of hand the keys to him in the way that the Kings did.
You know who I think that guy is now? Because I'm with you. I think that was obviously the plan. But that guy now is Quentin Byfield.
Yeah.
Byfield's a guy that's going to take over from Kopitar. Like, when he finally settles back to his natural position of center. And if you look, the thing that cinched it for me, it's not just the play. Like, Byfield's been great all year with the Los Angeles Kings. You hear him doing post-game interviews, that guy's not already starting to talk like a captain and talk like a leader of this team. And then you hear Pierre-Luc Dubois interviewed, and they could not be more polar opposites. Like, everything that we thought Pierre-Luc Dubois was going to grow into in Los Angeles, Byfield's there. And when Kopitar is ready to go, guess who's sliding into that spot? It's Byfield.
I want to talk about speech patterns in a second, but I wanted to ask you this. Do you think that this three in a row loss to the Oilers in the last three seasons, plus the Dubois contract, plus, you know, the coach firing not working out necessarily, do you think this is the end of Rob Blake? He's only got 1 year left after this one.
You left out one other key ingredient there too.
Which is?
The goaltending.
Oh, the goaltending mess, yeah. I mean, I'll give him a... I mean, he didn't know that Copley was going to get hurt, and he clearly tried to make a change at the trade deadline that didn't work out. I mean, I know close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades. I get that, but, like, I'll give him a little bit more of a pass there than I will on, like, the Dubois contract and you know, firing McClellan for someone who didn't get him past the first round.
Yeah. With the goalie thing, like, I will give a pass on this. Like, we know that Los Angeles is trying to get UC Saros from the Nashville Predators. And this goes back to last season. But every time you call the Nashville Predators and ask about UC Saros and they say Quentin Byfield, you're Rob Blake. Jeez. Let me call you back, Barry.
There was also the potential of maybe them pulling, was it Ullmark at the deadline too, potentially? So,
yeah.
I don't know. Well, I'll give him a little bit more of a pass there. Let me ask you a question.
Put it this way. It is one of the things that the Los Angeles Kings need to make a decision on this offseason. And you're right. He has 1 year left on the deal. I think this is one of the decisions the Kings have to make. Absolutely.
So I'm listening to Darnell Nurse last night talk after the game. And I'm listening to his voice. And I did not, like, ever cover Darnell Nurse before he got to the Oilers. I found his speech cadence to be very much sounding like Connor McDavid's. And I sometimes think about like the generations of players that come up listening to interviews from guys. I think there's an entire generation of players, and I think Connor Bedard's one of them, who picked up their speech patterns from either Connor McDavid or Sidney Crosby when they do interviews. What do you think about that? Think about that a lot.
I never really thought about it, but as far as templates go, you know, it's funny too, because I always looked at Jonathan Toews and thought that his speech pattern template was both Steve Yzerman and Joe Sakic. Like whenever I heard Jonathan Toews talk, I thought, okay, this is a combination of Sakic and Yzerman.
The guy who wore 19, you mean? Yeah. You know.
Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah, precisely.
Right. So like I think you've got a generation of guys that have grown up seeing interviews with players like Connor and players like Sid. And in the case of a guy like Nurse having played with Connor, I do wonder if there's a certain amount of osmosis that happens of, well, you want to emulate the best. You want to emulate the guys that have done this, the legends. I wonder if he picked up something.
So Darnell Nurse would have been just aging out of the OHL when Connor started. They played against each other in a playoff round, I believe only once, when Nurse was with the Hounds. Yes, when Nurse was with the Greyhounds and McDavid was with Erie. Mm-hmm. That would have been the only time they overlapped in the playoff. But they would have been together. Like they would have overlapped in the, obviously, in the OHL, albeit briefly.
I don't know.
I don't want to give just a flippant, glib answer just for the sake of, like, hey, it's talk radio. You better have a take. I'm going to have to go back and listen to Darnell Nurse interviews.
I'm the take artist. You're not. Listen, the point is this. We always ask these guys about like where they drew their inspiration from as players. Like you talk to every American player in the league, and 8 out of 10 of them will say Patrick Kane, right? Like for example, or a Canadian center is going to say Sid or Bergeron, right? I do wonder if there's any inspiration in the way that these guys handle themselves, because they all grew up in the digital age. They all have access to these interviews and watch these guys post game.
But here's the thing:
and I wonder if they picked up any tricks of the trade, either watching these guys or is it when you play with these guys, then you see how they carry themselves and you pick up like a cadence or something like that.
So here's what I think now about younger athletes. You can tell me whether you think I'm on base or off base.
Oh, here's my
take on it.
Sure.
Here's my take on this one. I don't think that they, when it comes to their presentation, either physical presentation or vocal presentation, I don't think that they're drawing inspiration from hockey. I think it's from other sports. And those are the inspirations for how they want to behave and be seen and be perceived. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't necessarily know that they want to be the aw shucks guys anymore. Ah, shucks, you know. Just contributing, you know, coach says this and just, well, you know, it's all of us. It's not just me. Get a lot of help out there. Like no one does it on their own. Like I don't think that they're drawing inspiration from that anymore. I think that they have access to a much wider, much more colorful sports universe that a lot of players before them never had. And that's where their inspiration comes from.
I want to believe that. I don't think there's been a moment where I've heard Connor Bedard talk and said to myself, boy, that guy sounds like Logan Paul. he's very much a hockey dude. But no, nothing would make me happier than if they're drawing inspiration from the NFL or the NBA or any of these places. Like, that'd be great. But you're right. They have access to a lot more than simply just hockey post-game interviews. Yeah. I don't know. This has always been fascinating to me because part of the growth of a player in this league is understanding how to conduct yourself in public, whether it's with the media or meeting fans or talking to executives or whatever. And you know, you can practice 10 hours a day and become the best stick handler of your generation, but you have to learn that from somewhere. And the other part of it, and I've always been interested on where these guys kind of pick up those tricks.
Like you look at someone like Isaac Howard, okay?
Yeah. A great guy. Yeah, hilarious.
First round draft pick. Right? And do you think he got any of that from hockey? Like, seriously, Wish.
No.
Do you think
no.
any of that comes from hockey? Not a
Do you
chance.
Think that he shows up to the like, NHL
These are the
NHL
guys that I'm talking about.
Yeah, he showed up the NHL draft having watched the NBA draft. Like, clearly.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So, like, I think that that's one of the things that I think is changing slowly each and every year. And we'll see more of them at the draft this year that are like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know about you. I think the answer is probably yes, but I'm loving Vegas and Dallas. Greg Wyshynski.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a fascinating series in the sense of how quickly Dallas turned on the afterburners. They in theory, should have been up already in this series if Ottinger didn't lay an egg in game one. But he was great in game five, and he's really turned his series around. I think Vegas called the bluff first with the lineup changes for game five, not only the goalie, but the other things mm-hmm. that Cassidy did. And I know my colleague Emily Kaplan mentioned this on the broadcast last night, and I'll reiterate it here. Like, for all of the talk about Mark Stone coming back to the lineup for game one of the playoffs, like, I think we can be pretty sure that 65% of him came back to the lineup. Like, he's not himself right now in this series, and I think that's a real deleterious effect to what Vegas wants to do. It's interesting. I think I hate to say this because I genuinely like seeing Vegas make long playoff runs because they are the preeminent villain in the National Hockey League, and any series they're in automatically gets more interesting for me. That being said, them going out in the first round makes them like one of the top two most interesting teams of the offseason, because like they've made a huge investment in this roster, and Bill Foley does not suffer for first round exits. And what is the reaction to this?
Yeah, you want the camera in the office there for that one. Now, here's what I wanted to get to with this Vegas Dallas series, and I just found the tweet. Okay, like I always wondered if there was going to be a Hockey Twitter Hall of Fame. There's a number of tweets that belong in there, and this is one of them. Now, if you're listening right now in Vancouver, you might want to close your ears, but this one does belong in the Twitter Hockey Hall of Fame, and I'm going to bring this back to Vegas in a second.
All right.
This is from April 12th, 2012. 1:26 a.m. Eastern. This is after the Los Angeles Kings defeated the Vancouver Canucks. Quote, "To everyone in Canada outside of BC, you're welcome." Los Angeles Kings Twitter feed. You remember that tweet?
I do remember that
now,
one. Yeah, that's great.
If you're handling the Dallas Stars social media and the Dallas Stars eliminate the Vegas Golden Knights, you must have thought about what the tweet will be. Mm-hmm. Will it be similar to the LA Kings from October 12, 2012? To everyone in Canada outside of BC, you're welcome.
Well, first of all, when it comes to Hall of Fame tweets in hockey, I do have to put that one behind Sean Gentile's Emerson eat 'em, then he poop 'em, which I think might be the highest, the peak form of hockey tweets of all time. But no, you're right. Like, the reaction's going to be interesting because they will have done. Well, here's the thing. They'll have satisfied a lot of people that want to see the Golden Knights suffer Schadenfreude and leave the playoffs early.
Yeah.
They will be depriving us of some inherent drama of seeing a Vegas-Colorado series. I think that'd be pretty dope.
Oh, that would be so good, too.
But at the same time, like, the Dallas Stars demonstrably have been the best team in the West throughout the year. And I think that there's a certain gratification in seeing those predictions and seeing that praise come to fruition. Dallas, Colorado is going to be a banger too, no doubt, if that happens.
Yeah.
And it may not still. I mean, this is Vegas we're talking about. Tough place to win, tough place to play. We'll see what happens.
I just love the series. I think it's great, and I can't help but thinking, like, I always think about, because I've never worked as a social media manager, I've never handled anyone's social media accounts, but you have to be thinking, okay, if/when we beat Vegas, what's the tweet going to be? Like, this is the way we consume sports now, right? Like, think about that Kings tweet as it came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And it was like, bam, oh, and just captured everything in that moment. Dallas has to have one ready to fire off.
Did you, speaking of
whoever handles a Dallas Stars account, Yeah.
Pressure's on. Pressure's on. Speaking of Twitter feeds, did you see what the Hurricanes are doing with the T-shirts?
No, what are they doing?
So they made T-shirts that say "cry" on them, which was something that their Twitter feed.
Oh yeah.
But the cool thing is, so the shirt says "cry," but the part of the proceeds for the sale of these shirts are going to like the National Diaper Bank or whatever to like buy diapers for mm-hmm. people that can't afford diapers. I'm like, that's brilliant. Like the Hurricanes Twitter feed to me has always been the inheritor of the LA Kings snarky smart hockey vibe, and I was really impressed that they were able to spin some of that hockey snark into a good cause this week.
It's good. Oh yeah, there it is. Like many similar. Blah, 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 blah. Oh yeah,
cry.
Yeah. There it is.
Yeah, cry,
cause chaos. I love it. Porsche benefit the at Diaper Network.
Diaper Network. I've tried to say the name of this charity 17 times, and I've come up with all different. It's got diapers. If there's people that need diapers, they give you the diapers. That's all you need to know.
Well, it's actually a National Diaper Bank Network.
Yeah.
The NDBN provides basic necessities required to build the strong foundations all children, family, and individuals need to thrive and reach their full potential. Good on the
right.
Carolina Hurricanes.
It's awesome.
For helping them out. A little bit of snark in the way. All right, you enjoy the game tonight. We'll talk in 7 days, and you'll be good. Enjoy the playoffs.
Here we go. I am enjoying them. I also enjoy sleep. Hope to get some of that at some point in the second round, maybe.
This first round's been tough for sleep.
it's a lot of late nights, my friend. A lot of writing until 3.
It's been hard,
like last
man.
Night. But well, wait, that's the life. That's the life we've chosen.
That's the difference between you and me. You've had writing till 3 this week, and I've had barfing till 3 this week. So that's the difference in our
lives. Well, I mean, actually, Merrick.
But I'll look to correct that.
If you've read my writing, there is no difference between you and I this week.
fair. How do you write? Well, I bleed and barf. All right, there you go. Greg Wyshynski from ESPN and The Drop. You be good, pal. We'll talk in 7 days.
Take care.